Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to the big Trump-O'Reilly tour, whatever that's going to be. I think the more Trump is out and about, I think the more people are going to realize that they're glad he's gone and the reason that he lost. So by all means, I hope O'Reilly trots him all over the country. I hope they've got falafels and loofah sponges at every stop and grab her by the you-know-what tour, all of that stuff. I'm really looking forward to it. I may actually pay attention. I didn't watch the speech in North Carolina. I may actually. But here to share some thoughts on the big tour, I've asked our good friend Max Burns to come talk with us. Max is a Democratic strategist, also a columnist over at the Daily Beast and NBC News. Max, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
So the big tour, I guess it's going to be like kind of just like a, you know, a sit down kind of interview tour. Not the kind of rally stuff that I was expecting. Is this what I'm getting?
Who knows? I give Donald Trump 5 minutes sitting in a chair talking to Bill O'Reilly before he gets bored and stands up and just starts taking questions from people. But it is interesting to see the ways now without Twitter that the former president is finding to try and stay relevant and get in front of people. None so far have worked. But he sure seems to have no shortage of energy in trying to get in front of people.
Yeah, he had that blog for about 6 minutes.
Yeah, the rest in peace. I saw that was gone. There was a study out, I think, in the Washington Post just this week that showed how significantly Donald Trump has vanished from American public life just from being deplatformed off social media platforms. And it makes you wonder what this country might have been like had we done that 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when he first started violating the rules. Right. And maybe we would have seen the Donald Trump, Bill O'Reilly tour in 2016.
And I would have been okay with that. I may have actually promoted it. Now, I find it interesting, two disgraced Republicans. I know Bill O'Reilly likes to pretend that he's an independent. But, you know, two ideologues running around. I think it's all about cashing in and fleecing the flock. But do you see anything for them in this? I mean, do you see anything for Trump in this whole thing?
Yeah, I think there's for Trump, there's recognition, which is really what he's going for. And he's also with this, with his rallies, looking to sort of get back out in front of his base and get them in line ahead of the 2022 midterm elections. And there's a lot of evidence to show that when he gets out in front of these voters, that works, and they do fall in line behind him. So this is Trump getting out there. For Bill O'Reilly, I think he's just glad to be able to leave his house. I don't think the last time he's been outside was maybe 2018.
But here's the thing. There's got to be a point, at least I hope, there's got to be a point at which the Republican faithful go, you know, I'm tired of hearing that 2020 was stolen. I'm tired of hearing the same old rhetoric without any evidence. Because we've heard all the tales, we've heard all the anecdotal evidence. But when they stepped into a courtroom with the person wearing the robe and slapped their hand on that book that they say they love so much and swore to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, they didn't bring any of that stuff in there. So at some point, doesn't that have to break down?
You see, had you asked me that 6 months ago, I'd have said yes. But looking at the information we have now, it seems like, if anything, this is the one thing that Republicans need in their minds, is to have Trump out there. What a lot of Democrats, I think, have overlooked is how completely financially dependent the RNC and the Republican Party in general is on Donald Trump. All of the fundraising that they've done has gone through Mar-a-Lago. So they are, whether they like it or not, attached at the hip to him. And they need him out there if they want to stay competitive. Whether that's good for democracy or even for them is a much tougher question to answer.
Yeah, I don't see how it's good for democracy, but I certainly don't see it as any good for the Republican Party, because at one point they used to have some kind of principles. I mean, I have had, you know, spirited conversations with honest conservatives. They are few and far between to be found today, but they used to exist. They're now kind of a party just in a drift, only about power, only about dominance and grievance.
Yeah, and there were talks a couple weeks ago about another attempt at forming a third party. the Project for American Renewal, or Plan for American Renewal, they called it. But I think in a lot of ways, that's just posturing. This civil war in the GOP has happened. The Trump faction won decisively. We see that with the rise of Marjorie Taylor Greene. We see that with the complete financial capture of the GOP by the Trump wing of the party. I hate to break it to a lot of these disaffected Republicans, but it's time to find a new home. You're not getting your party back ever.
Ever? You don't think at some point, you know, they wake up to the Marjorie? Because look, I think when Trump goes away, if he dies or whatever, because he has some level of charisma, he has some level of salesmanship. He really knows how to turn a phrase and keep people engaged. When I start looking at idiots like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, I don't know how they move that party in that same direction once he's gone.
And that's the big secret behind the show, is that while everyone's looking at Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, the base loves them. They get people donating money. People love to support. Marjorie Taylor Greene's supporters have a fanatical love for her. They financially donate far more than the average politically active American. And that's great. But my concern is these people like Ron DeSantis, like Josh Hawley in Missouri, who have perfected the policy aims of Trumpism without looking like complete morons all the time.
Yeah.
And while Marjorie Taylor Greene's raising money, they're telling donors and moderate Republicans that the grown-ups are coming back in power. And it's just not true.
No, you've identified
with a better look.
You've identified the thing that scared me right from the beginning of Trump. I said, you know, at some point Trump's going to, you know, he's going to flame out because people will get tired of the sideshow. They'll get tired of that kind of insanity. The person who can come in and take his same kind of you know, white supremacist kind of hatred for everyone mentality and normalize that and not be crazy, that's the dangerous one. And you're right. DeSantis, to me, is extraordinarily dangerous because he has normalized that kind of crazy.
Yeah. And the person who wins the Republican nomination in 2024 will be the person who is able to say, I can get Trumpism done. I can convert the goals we had into laws that a conservative Supreme Court will uphold and protect. And that's what Josh Hawley's been doing since Donald Trump took office. That's what Ron DeSantis is trying to do with voter suppression and attacking big tech in Florida. And that's much more dangerous because that's the evils of Trumpism and the competence of someone who actually understands how to make things work.
Yeah, and that's why I was glad he chose Mike Pence. Mike Pence knew how to do it. It's just no way Donald Trump was ever going to listen to him on how to get anything done. But here's my problem. I go, you've got the Republican Party who's in chaos on this side, but I look at the Democrats. Obviously you're a Democratic strategist. You're going to be able to speak to this, you know, probably much better than I or anyone else. There's concern on that side of the aisle as well, because you don't have Trump to beat up so much. You don't have him to run against. You got to run on an agenda. You got to get something done. And yep. There's talk that, you know, the Democrats are splintered too. You've got all of these minority coalitions going on. You haven't talked to the working class all that well over the last couple of decades. So all is not great there either.
No, and this is an opportunity that Democrats, I think, have really jumped at this week, especially with this circus of Trump's first event, that this is really an opportunity to bridge these gaps and to stop talking so much about areas where Democrats are finding fissures and finding divisions and focus just for a minute on a reminder of what we overcame to get here and how important it is that that is never in power again. And you're right. I mean, there are serious cracks within the Democratic majority right now that need to be addressed. But this gives some very needed breathing room for people to cool down a little bit and maybe try and get some sort of working consensus.
No, I said, you know, after Joe Biden won the election that the electorate was I think, smarter than I was. Joe Biden was my fourth choice. But in retrospect and looking back, he was the perfect choice for the moment because he really has calmed that temperature down. He really has not engaged in the kind of any type of rhetoric. Talk about that. He hasn't gotten in the middle of any of those fights. He hasn't started any fires. It's been show up, do the job, and move on, which is what we needed as a country.
Yeah, and it has been. And I think this is also an opportunity to look at how bleak things could have been had things gone only slightly differently in November of last year. I mean, there's a lot of talk now about Joe Manchin and about how he's a little better for us than a Republican. But, you know, had Republicans won more seat in the Senate, we would have no $2 trillion COVID stimulus. We would be nowhere on infrastructure. We would be nowhere with judicial nominees. These are things that we can really be grateful for when we look at Trump out on the trail, spreading hate, spreading conspiracies about the election. And I think a lot of moderate Republicans take one look at that and sort of are reassured that maybe they chose to vote Biden or blank their vote this cycle.
Do you see that continuing, though? I mean, you know, when you look at what's going on in states across this country as Republican legislators are doing what they can do to block people from voting in the next election and even setting it up to where, you know, legislatures can go and overturn elections, which I can't believe I say out loud that in this country, we're going to allow a legislative body to overturn the will of the people. But that's the reality of the moment that we're in.
Yeah, and make no mistake, this is an open war on voting rights that's led by the GOP. They're not hiding it. They speak very openly and proudly about it. The top leaders for the presidential nomination on the Republican side fight to outdo each other in how severely they can limit the right to vote. This is an effort by the Republicans to rebuild the Jim Crow South in our lifetimes. And we have a very important decision to make as Democrats about how we stand up to that, because being silent is not an option.
No, I'm right there with you. Now, I had always been someone who was against getting rid of the filibuster, but I'm in this moment right now that we're in a different time. We've got a Republican Party that will vote for none of the priorities of this administration. They've come out and said, you know, the Biden agenda is dead. McConnell has been very clear about that. They have proven time and time again that they're going to amend things to death. And then not usually vote for it anyway. Today, the China bill being, you know, one of the few bipartisan moments that I can recall. I'm curious your position on this, because you've written extensively about Manchin and the filibuster. And the position you've taken, I think, is probably a pretty good one.
Yeah, I believe that Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and anyone who believes that bipartisanship is the way should simply put forward the 10 Republicans that they would like to vote with them on a bill. So far, neither Kyrsten Sinema nor Joe Manchin has come up with a single one. This is something that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks and is really beginning to snowball. We're seeing the Democratic Party really lose its patience with Joe Manchin. So I think we will start to see something move in the next couple of weeks here, which could be reducing it down to 55 votes. But frankly, it's not enough. And Joe Manchin should continue to have pressure on him from all sides.
No, I'm of the mindset, and I've you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington. You want to filibuster something, you get yourself up there and you tell me why. I think we should have talking filibusters. If it's that important that we can't vote on something and it's that important, everything else should stop. And you know, this is one of those things where if it's that much of a red line, then nothing else can go forward. And, you know, because I've had people say, well, you know, Rick, if you get rid of the filibuster, you're going to end up having the Republicans in power at some point, and they're going to do away with Social Security. They're going to do away with Medicare. They're going to do away with collective bargaining rights. They're going to undo the entire New Deal on day one. You know that's going to happen. And I say, well, this is where Democrats have the ability to have a talking filibuster. If it's that important, you hold the floor for the entire 4 years if you have to.
Yep. Yeah, and listen, let's be honest here. Let's be real about the reality that we live in. It's not some hypothetical, if we kill the filibuster, Republicans will gut Social Security and do all these nightmare things. If we don't abolish the filibuster and don't act to protect voting rights, those Republicans are going to win in 2022, and they're going to do all of those nightmare things. And we will sit there and wish that we had abolished the filibuster and protected voting rights when we had the chance.
I'm curious your thoughts on the For the People Act. Now, I've had people tell me that it's a mess. I've had people tell me there's way too much stuff in it. They did it in the other one is they did it in an election year as an election year ploy that wasn't really meant to pass. I'm curious your thoughts on what the For the People Act entails.
Well, I've spoken with a lot of the lawmakers that have been involved in pushing this, and it is certainly not a ploy. It is the strongest defense of voting rights since the Voting Rights Act. This restores huge portions of voting rights protections that were cut by the Supreme Court. It makes it much harder for people like Ron DeSantis to strip the right to vote and to overrule voters, to enact voter suppression. It takes things like what's happening in Georgia, where they're stripping state officials of power to oversee elections, and makes that much harder to do. These are things that should not be partisan. The only reason we are having this fight is because one party's political existence depends on this not passing.
No, I mean, and while there's, and this is the part that gets me, we're having this conversation about being bipartisan. And yet you look at states across this country who are ramming through voter suppression and voter theft tactics in a very partisan way. And we don't hear the same kind of complaints from the other side of, oh, we need to steal your vote in a bipartisan way. This is the irony of the moment that I see.
Yeah, and it's such a fixation on bipartisanship that we don't realize there's going to be no partisanship, because there will be no Democrats in elected office if these voter suppression laws pass. I mean, we're talking about overturning elections. There's a time to sit at the table and negotiate, and a time to protect the country. This is a time to protect the country.
Yeah. And this is where I go in, you know, because I have people who say, well, you know, the For the People Act, there's too much, it's a mess. And here's a bunch of reasons why. And I say, well, if that's the case, isn't that what the legislative process is for? Isn't this where we hone this down? If you really did have Republicans who had any interest in ensuring that people have the right to vote, engaging in that process is how we get legislation done. We're not doing that. Yep. We're just basically going, oh, they're going to filibuster? Ah, well, we're not going to even move on it. Me, I want to vote every day.
Yeah, and that's the nut of it, is that we're not disagreeing about policy. We're not saying this is how a bill can be better. It's Republicans in a unified way denying the operations of government at all. That is not what the founding fathers intended. That no one intends a government so dysfunctional it can't protect itself from attack. And that's what we have right now, unfortunately. And Joe Biden and Democrats need to step on the gas while we have the chance.
Yeah, while I got your final thought. Ron Johnson came out with a letter, him and Cruz, Ted Cruz and Bill Lee and I keep calling him Bill Lee. He was a pitcher in the 70s. Mike Lee and Rick Scott, they signed on to a letter saying that, you know, the people who, you know, invaded our Capitol, the insurrectionists, we're just treating them too harshly, Max. We're treating them badly. We're treating them too harsh.
Who knew the way to get Republicans on board with criminal justice reform was to just arrest a bunch of them for committing federal crimes? Now suddenly everyone on the right's a prison abolitionist. No one should be in jail for this. Everyone should get community service and deferred sentences. I'd love to see this kind of charity shown to literally anyone else in the country. That would be a great start.
No, because, you know, I remember a story of a guy here in Philadelphia who evidently stole 3 peppermint patties. I'm not making this up. He stole 3 little peppermint patty candies, spent over 500 days in jail waiting for a trial. Wasn't even guilty yet because he couldn't afford to post bond. Now you've got all these people who committed very serious crimes against our country, and now they're seeing what it's like to be involved in our criminal justice system. And hey, maybe on the other side, when they've paid their debt to society, maybe then, and only then, can they go back and say, maybe we need to reform this a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope that these policymakers see some of the shortcomings of the system now that their own voters are involved in it. But that shouldn't come as a way of exonerating them for attacking the United States Capitol. It shows you just how unmoored from any kind of mainstream policy vision the Republicans have come. It really is just about the base and about fundraising. And if you can rile people up and get them to open your wallets, you won. Who cares what damage it does to the country? And that's terrifying to me.
Reality TV government. There it is.
Yep.
Sad stuff. But Max, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work that you do. Hope folks will check out your most recent article on the upcoming Trump rallies, how it's going to help Democrats remind voters why they didn't reelect him. We'll get links out so people can take a quick look at that. Max, I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you, my friend.
Thank you. Anytime.
Good stuff. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.